Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
The majority of the work was accomplished by people who nobody even knows their name. Nobody remembers who they were. They didn't go down in history as a great author or a great orator or anything, but they were the ones who really did the work. And that's still true today. God is using ordinary people all over the place, and He's taking note of it.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his study in the Gospel of John. Join us as Pastor Brian resumes his teaching on John chapter 1, verses 35 through 51, in a message titled, The First Disciples. Now here's Pastor Brian.
Peter is from the Greek word Petros, for stone. So Simon Peter is the same as saying Simon and then adding the Kephas to it. So Jesus just takes one look at Simon and he says, your name is Simon. You're the son of Jonah. I'm changing your name. Changing your name to a stone. Now, it's interesting because a stone speaks of stability. It speaks of a firmness. You know, when you think of something that's founded on a rock, it's immovable. It's secure. When you look at this guy, Simon, who Jesus calls the stone, you find that in those early days, he was anything but stable. He was anything but immovable. The most favorite word that commentators use regarding Peter is impetuous. He was unpredictable. He was all over the place. To put it in the modern young people vernacular, he was bipolar. You know, one minute he was up here, the next minute he was down there, one minute he was doing this, then he was doing that, and he was anything but stable. He was always getting himself in trouble, and he was sometimes even getting the Lord in trouble. He's the one who said, Lord, although all of these forsake you, I will never forsake you. But then he turns around and he denies that he even knows Jesus. He's the one who tries to save Jesus from being arrested and pulls out his sword and severs the ear of the servant of the high priest. And we see in him, in the Gospels, we see a lot of instability. But as you follow the story on into the book of Acts, you find that he's the one who stands up on the day of Pentecost, and he's the one who begins to preach the gospel. And the multitudes begin to come into the church, and you find that he takes on a major role in leading that church in Jerusalem, and he becomes really the apostle to the Jews. Jesus sees beyond what we are to what we will become through his power and his grace. See, Jesus knew what Simon was like, but he also knew what he could turn him into and what he would turn him into. He would take him from being this unstable person emotionally, and he would make him a rock. And he would become a foundational person, a pillar in the early church. I'm so thankful that God is able to do that. Man, I think back at my life before I was saved. And I don't look back on it with any thought whatsoever that I would have done anything extraordinary or been any kind of a special person in any way. I just would have been as ordinary as possible and probably failed over and over again in probably most things I attempted to do. But I look at the faithfulness of God and I think of the stability that He brought into my life. Before I was a Christian, I was notorious for just sort of being here, there, and everywhere, you know, jumping from one thing to another. And it was just part of what was going on inside of me. There was just that intense sense of emptiness and frustration. And so it was basically a quest to try to find something to satisfy, something to fulfill. And so I would move swiftly from one thing to another, one project to another, one hobby to another, one relationship to another. And that was what marked my life. Back in those days, I guarantee I never could have imagined being married to one person permanently. But it's just a testimony of what God's able to do in our lives. And Peter's a great example. Jesus takes him and he says, I'm going to change your name. And of course, in biblical times, names were more significant than they are today. They actually meant something. So Jesus actually meant by this name change that I am going to make you into what I'm naming you. I'm going to make you into a stone. Now, the following day, Jesus wanted to go to Galilee, and he found Philip and said to him, follow me. Now, Philip was from Bethsaida, the city of Andrew and Peter. Now, how it is that Jesus found Philip, or whether or not he had had previous communication with him, we don't really know. This is our introduction to Philip. Jesus wanted to go to Galilee. He found Philip. Did he accidentally find him? Did he go looking for him? Doesn't tell us. But Jesus simply says to him, follow me. Now, here's something that you need to realize that you probably don't know yet. When you read Matthew, Mark, or Luke, they're known as the Synoptic Gospels. Shared that with you before. The word synoptic means from a similar point of view. So they call them the Synoptics because they seem to be written from a similar point of view and they seem to cover a lot of the same material, although there are some serious differences that are sometimes overlooked. But in the Synoptics, you probably remember reading that Jesus, on one occasion, he's walking along the Sea of Galilee and he sees Simon and Andrew brothers, and he sees James and John brothers, and he says to them, come follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men. You remember reading that? Now, when you read that, of course, what you're initially led to think is that these guys are just, they're working away as fishermen, cleaning their nets and all, and this perfect stranger named Jesus walks by and says, hey, come and follow me. And they just say, all right, here we come. And you read it and you think, wow, that's a bit peculiar. That's a bit odd. But you see, the reality is this. The Synoptics, there's an entire year of association and relation to Jesus that the Synoptics do not record. And that's what we're reading about right here. And what we're reading about in the Synoptics is not the call to discipleship. These guys were already the disciples of Jesus. He's calling them at that point to apostleship. And that's where the Synoptics pick up the story, and their concentration is primarily on the ministry in Galilee. But in the first few chapters of John's gospel, we have an entire year of ministry recorded for us, much of it taking place in Jerusalem that the other gospel writers never told us about. So that's a little bit of the background. Jesus is calling these guys right now. to become his disciples, and they're going to spend a good year with him, and then he will call them to that position of apostleship. But this man, Philip, you know, who is he? And for that matter, who are any of these guys? Well, you know what? They're just ordinary people, loved and called by God to be his followers. God chooses and uses ordinary people. That is the beautiful thing that you learn in the pages of the scripture. Unfortunately, throughout much of the history of the church, there's been this idea that there is a hierarchy. There's the clergy, as they're referred to, and then there's the laity. And the clergy are the people that God uses, and the laity are the people that watch the clergy get used by God. But this isn't the biblical picture at all. And I love to look at this and see how Jesus is going about here, and he's calling just ordinary people like us. He's calling them to come and be his disciples. And guess what? He hasn't stopped doing that. He's still doing it today. He's doing it all over the world today. Just like he went and found Philip and said, follow me. He's doing that all over the world today. He's just reaching out. He's touching people's lives. He's saying, come and follow me. And as we begin to follow him, he takes us on a grand adventure. This wonderful thing of knowing God and serving him. We take trips to Africa. We take trips to China. We take trips to Europe. We go all around ministering the gospel, reaching out, serving the Lord. It's a great adventure. That's what the Lord's calling us to. He's calling us to be part of this great work that he's doing. And who's he calling? He's calling just ordinary people. God has a plan for you, whoever you are. That is such a wonderful thing. I got an email from a friend, and he was quoting Charles Spurgeon, who I referred to earlier. The gist of the email had to do with some statements Spurgeon made about how God uses common people. And he talked about, well, one of the examples he gave was the example of John Bunyan. John Bunyan was a man who was like a handyman in his community, is pretty much what he was. And yet he felt called by God to minister God's word. He began to share God's word. That resulted in him being cast into prison. He was in prison for 13 years. But while he was in prison, he felt inclined to write. He'd never written before. He hadn't had much of an education to speak of. And he wrote several books, one of them being the book, The Pilgrim's Progress, which is the second best-selling book of all time. And he was talking about how God just, again, this point, he just takes ordinary people. And then Spurgeon went on to talk about the Great Reformation and all the great things that had happened historically in the country up until his time. And he mentioned a few of the leading figures, but he went on to say that the majority of the work was accomplished by people who nobody even knows their name. Nobody remembers who they were. They didn't go down in history as a great author or a great orator or anything, but they were the ones who really did the work. And that's still true today. God is using ordinary people all over the place. And he's taking note of it, whether we are or not. So he finds Philip. He says to him, follow me. Now, Philip was from Bethsaida. He was from the same place as Andrew and Peter. But Philip now, he found Nathanael. So Andrew, he meets Jesus. He says, I got to tell my brother. Philip meets the Lord. He's got a friend, Nathanael. I've got to go find my friend Nathanael. So he goes to Nathanael and he said to him, we have found him of whom Moses in the law and also the prophets wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. And Nathanael said to him, can anything good come out of Nazareth? Philip said to him, "Come and see." Now, Nathanael, for whatever reason, he didn't have a real high opinion of Nazareth. Some people say that Nazareth was a notoriously wicked place. Some people just say that it was just incredibly insignificant. But we don't know the actual facts. But for some reason, Nathanael was thoroughly unimpressed, to say the least, when he found out that Jesus was from Nazareth. Can anything good come out of Nazareth? But notice what Philip says to him. He says, "Come and see." And you know, sometimes that's really the best way to approach it with a person. Just invite them to come and check it out themselves. You know, sometimes you're trying to share with somebody and you feel like you're not breaking through and they're not getting it. And, you know, they think you've flipped out. You're just a religious freak now. You know, what do you do over at that church? They serve you Kool-Aid or, you know, I got all kinds of ideas. Just say, "Hey, come over and check it out. Come and see." And the Lord quite often uses that. Now, Nathanael, this Gospel of John is the only gospel where Nathanael is mentioned by name. And some people have deduced from that Nathanael was a disciple, but he was never really an apostle. But it seems to me that Jesus is gathering now this group of men who are going to be his apostles. Andrew was an apostle, of course. Simon Peter was an apostle. Philip was an apostle. I think Nathanael was too. But he's not mentioned by name in the synoptics. But there is a person in the synoptics who I think was Nathanael. In the synoptics, his name is Bartholomew. Bartholomew means the son of Talmai. It's an Aramaic word. The son of Tolmai. Now, oftentimes, as we've already seen, people in this culture had more than one name. And I do believe that Nathanael is the Bartholomew of Matthew, Mark, and Luke. So now listen to this next part here in the story, though. This is so fascinating to me. So Jesus saw Nathanael coming toward him and said of him, "Behold, an Israelite, indeed, in whom is no deceit." An Israelite, indeed. There's no deceit. There's no guile in him. Nathanael said to him, "How do you know me?" How do you know that about me? Jesus was describing this guy as he was genuine. He was pure. He was guileless. He was a straight shooter. He was the "what you see is what you get" kind of a guy. And Jesus pegs him right the moment he sees him. And Nathanael's puzzled. He says, "How do you know me? I don't know you." And then Jesus answered and said to him, "Before Philip called you, when you were under the fig tree, I saw you." Now listen to this response. Nathanael answered and said to him, "Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel." What a bizarre response. But maybe not. It seems bizarre, but if you think about it, it might not be that bizarre at all. Remember what Philip said. "We found the one who Moses and the prophets spoke about. We found the Messiah." Nathanael comes. Jesus said, "An Israelite indeed, in whom is no guile. How do you know me? How do you know who I am?" Jesus says, "I saw you under the fig tree." And Nathanael breaks forth in this proclamation that Jesus is the Christ. I suggest to you that it's not bizarre if under the fig tree there was an extraordinary spiritual experience that Nathanael had. Something that he and he alone knew about. And I think that's what happened. And I think that's really the only way to explain the response of Nathanael. I don't think it was simply that Jesus just had foreknowledge that he was under a fig tree. I mean, that could be impressive, but I don't think it's impressive enough to conclude, yes, indeed, you are the Messiah, you are the King of Israel. I think as we read on, you'll see why I think that. I think that something extraordinary happened with Nathanael under the fig tree. There was an extraordinary spiritual experience that occurred. He had an encounter with God that Jesus just mentioned that he knew about. And that, of course, would cause Nathanael to know that he was indeed speaking with the Messiah. Jesus answered and said to him, "Because I said to you, I saw you under the fig tree, do you believe? You will see greater things than these." And he said to him, "Most assuredly, I say to you, hereafter you shall see heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man." See, I think this is the answer. This is speculation to some degree, but I think it fits with what we just read. Nathanael was meditating under a fig tree, and he had an experience with God, and part of his meditation was upon that incident back in the life of Jacob where there was a ladder that went up to heaven and the angels were ascending and descending upon that ladder, going from earth to heaven and back. And the Lord alludes to that, and in doing so, what he's talking about is that he is the fulfillment of the very thing that Nathanael was pondering while he was under the fig tree. Imagine that. He would have known the stories. And there he was just thinking about Jacob as he fled from his brother Esau, and as he was headed toward his uncle's home, and as he was tired, and that evening as he was there resting with a rock for a pillow, he has a dream about this ladder and the angels, and he wakes up and he says, "I didn't know it, but I'm in the very house of God." And he names the place Bethel. And Nathanael's thinking about all that. He's meditating on it. He's wondering about it. What does this mean? What's the significance of that ladder, he might have been pondering. Jesus says, "Hereafter you'll see heaven open, and the angels will be, notice, ascending and descending, not upon a ladder, but upon the Son of Man." Could it be that God had spoken to Nathanael about the ladder in preparation for his meeting with Jesus, the one whom the ladder foreshadowed? I think so. I think that's what's going on. Now, Jesus, as he speaks to Nathanael and draws him right in, this is a prophetic moment. You might call it a word of knowledge, a prophecy. This is a prophetic instance that's occurring. God still does these things today. He does these things today. It's called prophecy. Paul said, when an unbeliever enters an assembly where the prophetic word is being spoken, that the unbeliever is convicted and convinced, the secrets of their heart are revealed, and falling on their faces, they confess that God is among you.
For the month of June, Back to Basics Radio is offering a book titled A Story of Grace by Phil Metzger. The book follows the work of God's grace across Eastern Europe, from the fall of communism to the present day. It's the story of hope in the midst of hardship, a story of mercy in the darkest hour, but most of all, it's a story of God's amazing grace. The book titled A Story of Grace by Phil Metzger is our gift to say thank you for your donation to Back to Basics. We encourage you to call us right now at 1-800-733-6443. or visit us online at backtobasicsradio.com to order this book titled A Story of Grace by Phil Metzger. And when you give a gift to Back to Basics, we'll send you the book titled A Story of Grace by Phil Metzger as our way to say thank you. We really do appreciate your generous support of this ministry. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the Gospel of John. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.